Welcome to Color Country Politics, where we discuss all the important political issues facing Iron County, Utah. Our guests include elected officials and community leaders in or representing Iron County.
Today is episode 4, Bond, School Bond. We have special host Jenny Hendricks and Cedar City Councilwoman Terry Hartley sitting down with Iron County School Board of Education members Harold Haney and Michelle Lambert to talk about the new $92 million school bond. Without further ado, here's our podcast.
Hello, I'm Jenny Hendricks here with Color Country Politics. I've got Terry Hartley, councilwoman for the Cedar City Council, and she's going to be our moderator today. Our guests are Harold Haney and Michelle Lambert from the Iron County School Board. And we are talking today about the Iron County School District general bond election for 2018. It's going to show up on your ballot. And we were hoping for some great information and kind of some in-depth analysis and details about what voters should expect when they see that on their ballot. So welcome. And Terry, I'll let you kind of take it from here.
All right. Thank you. Thank you both for coming in and helping us out with this. And hopefully we can make it through some of these informational things and get people on board.
Absolutely. Thank you for having us. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. So Michelle, do you want to just kind of lead out?
And sure.
As we have questions, as Harold, you know, has comments and whatnot, jump in there and then we'll get his take on it too. So.
You bet. Just a brief overview of the bond. We are asking for a $92 million general bond that will meet some urgent needs in the district right now. The first one being we feel like there's a critical need to update the safety and security in our schools right now. And some schools won't require too much. We've got some beautiful new schools. North Elementary is really the standard right now for where the level we'd like to bring all our schools to, where we've got a secure entrance off of where you go through the office, and that way we know who's in the school and what they're doing and what they're there for, and we have the ability to lock doors on demand and take care of things so that our children are safe. And I think we can all agree that is our highest priority. We want our kids to be safe at school. Yeah. So that's the top priority, and then we have some other projects as well that are really important.
Okay.
The basis of the bond, I think, yes, security is the number one priority to start with. If you're a long-term resident of Cedar City, you probably went to the old North Elementary, South Elementary, East Elementary. I think some of the things that have come up to me in questions, people don't realize how challenging it is to be able to put a safety program into a school where you're going to walk through a third of the school before you get to the office. Almost that's the case at East Elementary. You cover a lot of ground before you ever get to where you can meet with anyone from administration. And so the idea of being able to provide the safety that we need in our schools and without disrupting the existing building, for a couple of those buildings, it's just not possible. It just can't be done by just having a security guard at each door kind of a thing.
Right.
So that's a main issue. And the other needs that have come up that are urgent needs are a growth factor. So in our middle schools, we have amazing music programs. I don't know the exact number at either one of them, but I know that at Cedar Middle School, I think the number was 72% of the students at Cedar Middle School are involved in the school band.
Wow.
And with those kind of numbers, it's like a sardine can most days when you're in class,
sure.
Much less the performances. So one of the initial needs, major needs, is to add a music room to both of the middle schools. And that will allow us to have some space for some additional classrooms that we also need, because we do have students that for certain classes are meeting in the lunchroom. In some cases, for certain events, they actually have to be in the hallway because we can't accommodate the numbers that of students that are needed in a specific classroom. So those, the safety, and then creating enough space for what I call quality education. It's just really hard to do some programs when students are stacked in there like sardines, mm-hmm. especially when they're all playing different musical instruments.
Well, thank you. So it looks like from the information, you're breaking that out. It's over a 10-year plan. You've both talked about kind of the immediate needs that would be done with this first block that I understand is around $26 million. Mm-hmm. Do you want to kind of talk about like how you've segregated that over the next 10 years, what you're expecting to fund?
Yes, absolutely. So in an effort to reduce the tax impact for voters so that we can keep the tax rate pretty stable, we've chosen to issue the bonds at three separate times. So if the bond were to pass in November, which we hope it does, we'll be able to issue the first bond and take care of the needs we just discussed immediately. We would wait a couple of years, 2 or 3 years, and then issue a second set of bonds that would help us cover a potential replacement elementary school. We've got two elementary schools that are over 60 years old, nearly 70 years old, and we learned through the process of looking at North Elementary that we're to the point with some of these schools where remodeling is almost the same cost as building a new one, and especially where we have some of these basic concerns with the layout, and to try and remodel and restructure is just not practical. And so a second issuance would allow us to build a second elementary, another elementary school, or replace that one. And then the third issuance would be another 2 or 3 years after that, and we could take care of another elementary school. And along the way, there are some other projects in there that are important. We've got some updates to some of our high schools. One of the other areas, aside from the middle school, where we're seeing a lot of growth is in our preschools. We're doing, we have paid for out of our general fund an addition to the South Elementary preschool right now, because there was need there. The preschools are really growing, and so we need to add a new preschool facility. That would be part of the second issuance, I believe. And then we're also looking at being able to make upgrades to our alternative high school so that we've got better facilities for those kids as well. So.
Okay, great. Did you have anything to add to that, Harold?
I would just say, in regards to the preschool, and if people won't hold my feet to the fire, because I have a good memory, it just doesn't last very long. But the number that was shared, if I remember correctly, is that the growth in our preschool was 63% in the last 3 years.
Wow, that's amazing.
And so you look at the preschool that we have out at Three Peaks Elementary, and then the one at South, and we've added on to South once before. We're adding more space there at South. In the next building of an elementary school, we will also have to plan into that another preschool. It's just an incredible amount of growth in our community that has created this need. And so, again, growth is wonderful. Managing growth is the challenge. And I love the fact that the district has focused so confidently on a 10-year plan. Let's do this. Let's get ahead of the game. Let's know what we're doing before it comes upon us. So that would be what I would add to that.
I had just one quick question. I had someone ask me, why is it important to do this in one bond instead of three separate bonds? You know, you're talking about kind of the three rollouts. Mm-hmm. Why is the school district asking for one bond instead of putting it out maybe three times?
I've heard that question as well. And I think it's a legitimate question, because you think, you know, why? I've heard the phrase, we don't want to give a $92 million blank check. Well, first of all, it's not a blank check. We have a project list. We're required by law now to provide a project list of what we plan to do with this money. So it's not a blank check by any means. Will things change? Could we have to do some adjustments over 10 years? Probably. And we can change the project list, but only through school board action in a public meeting. And so there is opportunity for voters to have some accountability. There's accountability in that process as well as flexibility. Now, this bond process is not cheap for the district. It's a huge investment in time. Our administrators have spent a lot of time going to different people, getting the word out, trying to explain what the need is. And then it's also a huge investment in money. And so I think, just to send out the voter pamphlets that hopefully everyone's received in the mail, it was somewhere around $10,000. Wow. just to mail those pamphlets out. And so the time and the money is significant cost to the district. And if we had to do that every 3 years, that's not an efficient use of taxpayer dollars. So by coming once and saying, here's our plan, here's our need, and this is not reactive, this is not, ooh, this would be nice. No, the district has spent a year, 2 years, I believe.
2 years.
2 years putting together a plan and studying the needs and preparing. And so this is not a reaction to current situation. This is not a wish list. This is something that's been really thoroughly studied out and planned and prepared for. By coming once, we've got the flexibility we need, but there's also accountability to voters.
Cool. Cool. Thank you.
I think that's a part great. Of that people don't understand is that the 10-year, and by spitting it out, there are not specific dates when we have to do the next draw of money, if you will. We're only paying on what we borrow, obviously, each time. And in the scenario, let's go back to the last bond issue that was done here in Cedar City. I don't remember the date of it, but it was also a 10-year plan.
It was 2006.
2006. Yeah. So in that scenario, it was pretty much last minute before we used the last of the $13 million that was available to us on that bond. And that was only done because the circumstances at North Elementary were mm-hmm. such that the cost of repairing that school was approximating the cost of replacing it completely. We were grateful that over the 10-year period, we had previously planned on building a new school, you know, years before. But the market, it changed. Mm-hmm. People weren't moving into Iron County as quickly as forecasted. Mm-hmm. And when those things change, then we have the flexibility to not use any of the money, or in this case, we use the money because of a dire need in a school that was we'll just say it had a lot of issues. We're not going to go into all the details of what was wrong with it, but it was very expensive to fix what was wrong with the school. And we were really grateful to still have some bond money left to be able to fix that. So in this current bond, the same scenario exists. If the market changes and we don't have the growth that's forecasted for Iron County, we don't have to do anything. Okay. We want to do the initial things that are for the safety and security of our students and accommodate where we already are so tight that we need some additional space. And after that, if the market changes and we don't have the growth that's forecasted, we can sit on the money. And if the 10 years goes by because the economy didn't change or improve, again, we don't have to use any of the rest of it. But as was expressed, the cost of preparing for this bond and getting the bond done is significant in time and money, and it's just a lot easier to do it all at once.
Okay, thank you.
All right, great explanation. Did you have anything to add to that, or should we, you know, now that we've talked a little bit or a lot about the needs and why we're looking at this and the 10-year plan, how about if we kind of go into like what is the taxpayers can expect to pay, you know, per household? I know there's numbers on the brochure that have been mailed out, but yes, let's dive a little bit deeper into maybe what that means to each individual taxpayer.
Well, one thing I think it's important to note is that the language on the ballot that we're required to put talks about the total tax impact, which is not quite the total tax, which is not quite the same as the change. And so on the ballot, I believe it's going to read, let's see a little section of it here. It's estimated amount of $200.17 per year on a residence of $217,000. That does not mean you'll be paying an additional $200. We have a great little graph in the voter pamphlet that explains this. Because old bonds are still in place, but in the process of being retired, you're already paying that. The new bonds will replace the retiring bonds, and the tax rate will remain actually quite stable. So if we pass this bond, it's estimated that the impact on an average household in Iron County will only be about $16 per year, and then gradually decrease from there. So don't let the language on the ballot scare you a little bit. It's not $200 on top of what you're already paying. It's actually only estimated to be about $16. So I use this phrase. I just think for the price of a pizza, I will forego a pizza if I can have these things for my kids. I think that it's completely worth it.
I think I would only add to that again, the timing of all of it is a critical part. Because as a school district, the 8 years that I've been on the board, the discipline of the administrators of the school district to ensure that we don't increase any more than is necessary anyone's tax burden, we have postponed and waited for things that needed to happen for 2 and 3 years sometimes just to wait for a retiring bond, something that would minimize any kind of an impact. And we have this goal to try to maintain and not have any kind of a severe impact. And that is certainly the case with this bond. We have, for lack of a better term, just had to sit on a lot of things that needed to be done. But we didn't want to do it before we were able to retire enough debt that it would have a minimum impact.
Maybe if I could throw something else in there. Sure. We've talked about a lot of people, and maybe this is one of your questions. Sorry if I'm jumping ahead.
No, no.
But I know people have talked about, why can't we pay as we go? And actually, as a district, we do pay as we go for a lot of things. I mentioned the preschool, that South Elementary preschool. That was a big project. In fact, a much bigger project. Construction costs have skyrocketed in recent years, and that ended up being far more expensive than we were originally planning. But we were, because we saved and because we were careful, we were able to pay for that out of our general funds. So if in order to do some of these projects, these are things that we don't have budget for right now, and we can try and save, but it will be very slow process, and we have critical needs here. But the only other option we have to raise funds would be to raise the tax rate on our capital fund. And I believe if we maxed that out, if we taxed as high as we were allowed to tax as a district by the state, it would raise about $4 million per year. So that's going to take a lot of years to get enough money to do the things that we need to do. And the tax impact on voters would be significant. It would, instead of $16 more, it would be about $128 per average household more per year. So I think as far as the bond is concerned, this is a much more fiscally responsible and economical way for voters to be able to provide for what the district needs.
Okay. I'd like to share the example in that discussion, Michelle. I like the idea that if you were to build your home, instead of getting a mortgage to build a house and build all of it at once, you can pay as you go, if you will, and add a room at a time. You know, this year we're gonna have a master bedroom, the rest of you are sleeping outside. Mm-hmm. But next year we're gonna add a room for child number one, depending on who you think that is, and then and
whichever
so forth.
Whichever one you like the most.
Whichever one we like the most. And it could change by next year. Right. but anyway, but so the idea is that to be able to get the funds to do it all at once, as opposed to piecemeal, not to mention, again, it's a lot more tax expensive to individuals to try to do it as you go and get that other $4 million, because it would require to raise the tax to the maximum allowed by law. And this way, we don't have to have that tax impact. We're going to spread it out over a 15-year period.
I think that's a great example.
That is a great example. So, let's see. I think we've discussed a lot of the things. One of the things that we talked about with regards to the pay-as-you-go, there's been some discussion. I know one of the rebuttals that are on the website talks about using 15-year money to buy video surveillance equipment that could possibly wear out in 5 years, but we're paying for them in 15 and then replacing them on a pay-as-you-go basis. Can you kind of talk about like putting the base in and along that line, why it's smarter to just get it all up front?
No, absolutely. And I think that's a great point. I think that's a valid question. I think to... generally speaking, we don't want to go into debt for things that are not going to be long-term. The difference here is that when it comes to security, we want to make changes now. We have actually been putting some security protocols in place along the way. Well, like I said, North Elementary is a new school, is more secure than some of our older schools. We do have some video surveillance in place and in certain spots in our school, but we're far from full video surveillance. And then obviously some of the costs to remodel for security are much bigger issues. So if we're just talking about video surveillance, because obviously the remodeling, those are bigger projects that make sense. As far as the video surveillance, it would just be a one-time shot to get all of the schools up to snuff. And it's kind of like what Harold was saying about your favorite child. I mean, okay, this school doesn't need to have that, but this school does, right?
Yes. But how do we pick which one will be safe first?
My kids are okay, but Harold's are not. Yeah, I mean, you know, we don't.
I mean, that's a valid point.
I think there's a critical need to get all of our schools up to the standard of security that we want. And so by getting all of the base level surveillance systems in place now, then we can pay as we go to replace, because it won't be all at once. There won't be, we can do it, you know, based on the ones that are wearing out or the ones that we can put it even on a schedule. We can rotate and take care of those maintenance and replacement costs. So it's just because, so we can do it all at once and get everyone where they need to be.
Okay. Great point. We've talked a lot about what it's going to cost the individual taxpayer. What can the businesses expect to pay
You know what? I don't know the answer to that, to be honest with you. Well, I don't know what the impact is on business. And Michelle's looking at me like I should know, but I honestly don't know the answer to that.
I believe the answer is in your brochure.
I think it is.
I jotted down some notes that it was about 364.
Yeah, there was a dollar amount, a year. But I didn't.
Yeah, that's the number that I remember is about $360 and change,
yeah.
To businesses. So
we thought it'd be important to get that out there, what the business owners can expect too.
So is that something similar to where you're talking in terms of a residence, you know, as far as the cost of a pizza being $16 and change, because we're already at sort of a baseline level? Is that the same with business owners? Are business owners already being taxed at kind of a base level, and so it's not going to be a $364 incremental increase? It's going to be something smaller than that. Do you have any?
I don't know what that amount would be, but I do know in this language on the bond, if it's okay, I'll just go ahead and read this, if that's all right. This is what it will say on the ballot. There's the bit about shall we issue a bond, and then the notice of property tax increase due to bond issuance. It says if the bonds are issued as planned without regard to the taxes currently levied, so in other words, not ignoring what you're already paying, for outstanding bonds that will reduce over time, an annual property tax to pay debt service on the bonds will be required over a period of, and it says 21 years here. I believe that that's a mistake. I believe it's 15 years. And speaking with our business administrator, we've never issued for longer than 15 years. Mm-hmm. In the estimated value of $200.17 per year on a residence of $217,000 value, and in the estimated amount of $363.94 per year on a business property having the same value. So for the average business value, the total amount that they would owe, retired bonds, new bonds, all of that would be $363. So the change will be
something less.
Something closer to $30.
Maybe $30.
Something closer to $30. A little less than double. It's not going to be $363 over and above what you're already paying.
Okay. I think that's important for our business owners to realize that their tax bill isn't going to go up.
No, no, it will not be significant.
Yeah, because we don't want them to have to give up pizza every week.
Right. I mean, no.
There are 52 weeks in the year.
That's it.
Yeah, good point. The other thing, I just thought it was really important to note that our district has been very conservative in the past.
Correct.
That all of our bond debt, even including the North Elementary School, would be paid off by 2024. And that is how we keep this level tax payment. So congratulations to our school administration and the school board for managing to that. So
thank you. That is another, again, I mentioned earlier, in the 8 years, I've been amazed. When I first came on the board, if you remember, we were in a downturn economically. A lot of school districts in the state of Utah had to reduce personnel big time. And because of a rainy day fund that was created in the Iron County School District by our administrators, not to mention any specific names, but there were so many people involved in we always being able to set aside something for the rainy day. And consequently, there were some cuts in pay, but no one that I know of ever had to be terminated because of the economical change in Cedar City. We were able to maintain. There were some days cut back on teachers, some prep days and stuff that were previously paid for. But I love the fact that we went into this. I came onto the board learning that we were financially probably better off than any school district in the state of Utah.
Well, as a banker, I've also seen it from the other side, underwriting some of the bonds for some of their previous projects. And Iron County School District has always had a AAA bond rating. They're very conservative and careful. I think that is a point, for people to maybe get some comfort going into this.
Absolutely.
That our school board is very responsible with the funding that they get. So.
And I'll just throw in there, I know this is something that the school district has been sharing, but one of the first things that they did when we authorized moving forward with this is they went to the Senator Howard Stevens and the Utah Taxpayer commission?
I can't remember. It's not a tax commission.
Association? I was going to look up the official name, and I can't. I knew it, and now I can't remember what it is. But they wanted them to look at it and weigh in on it. And in the past, any time the district has issued a bond, they've looked at it and said, oh, that looks pretty good. We won't make a statement on it. We're going to be neutral, which is pretty high praise, you know, because they're very careful watchdog, pretty stringent on what they deem acceptable. And with this one, they went and they sat down with Senator Stevens and talked through it and explained what they were doing and the impact that it would have. And he went to his board and came back a few weeks ago and said, we are giving our support. Wow. And so to have the support of that association is really says a lot about the responsibility that the district has taken and the effort that's gone to and being fiscally responsible. So
right. Well, Jenny, did you have any other questions for them?
I think that all of the questions that I had have been answered during the course of the conversation. So is there anything else and final thoughts that you'd like to get out there to the people who are looking at this on their ballots?
I would just add maybe that just a reminder that we are, as a district, we're open to the phone call anytime. Mm-hmm. If there's something that we did not cover this morning, make a phone call. Someone will be happy to explain or address whatever the issue may be. We're certainly open to answer any questions. So if you didn't hear it today and you don't find it when you go to the website, you still have another question, please feel free to call.
Thank you. I think that's important to get out there because I think there are a lot of questions and people can go to the website and then feel like they have access to their elected board members. I think that's
absolutely. Our emails are on the website. There's a way to get a hold of us. In just a second, what Harold said, we're here to listen and to hear what people's concerns are and to try and answer questions. And we're happy to do that.
Fantastic. Thank you very, very much for your time.
Thank you.
We really appreciate you guys coming out.
Thanks for having us in.
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, Terry.
It's been very informative. So thanks, Jenny, for hosting us.
Absolutely. Yeah. All right. Thank you. We'll see you soon.
You've been listening to Color Country Politics, a production in cooperation with Utah Politico Hub and graciously sponsored by Century 21 Prestige Realty at 121 North Main Street, Cedar City. Special thanks to Amoeba Crew for use of their song Background Indie Rock, licensed under Creative Commons. Subscribe to our podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever fine podcasts are found. Also, check out our YouTube channel where we post video of our interviews. And don't forget to follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Google+, and our website at www.colorcountrypolitics.com.